Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David and I'm an alcoholic. Housekeeping, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings at our website, simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity prayer.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the urge to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here today in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody in their first 30 days? On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple actions. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple action. The AA preamble says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step four, part one, resentments. Please help me welcome our panel this evening. We have Lygia and Donald. And we usually do, as you know, ladies' choice around here. So after I read, you can either share first, Lygia, or you can throw Donald under the bus as you see fit. We're going to start on page 63. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered?
Thank you, Dan. Hey, good evening, everybody. My name's Lydia and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lydia.
And I'm really grateful to be here tonight. I'm always grateful to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to start off with inviting you to my home group because you invited me to yours. I'd like you to come to my home group on Thursday night. And it's called Joys of Recovery. And we read every page of the book. And the name of my home group has a lot to do with how I feel about my sobriety. It is a joy. It is joyful to be here and to be sober today. And I could never be grateful enough to the higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous for the privilege I get to live this life right now. So first of all, thank you. And I'll hope to see you on Thursday. And if you don't bring a book, we have them there for you. So I welcome you. You know, we launched on a course of vigorous action. When did I launch? You know, when did I launch into Alcoholics Anonymous? First of all, we don't have any water bottles around, but my last drink was a water bottle full of vodka on March 28th, 2010. I was en route to rehab, and they said, your insurance might not cover it if you don't come under the influence. So I took it upon myself. I had stopped. No, it was a $31,000 bottle of vodka. So I just said, no, we had a kid in college at the time. I had insurance, but they said they might not cover it. I had stopped that. I'd actually technically with the last drink I wanted to drink, and this is true, had been that Tuesday night after I had completed working an 8-hour day in the office and teaching my second alcohol safe driving school class to my Spanish students. I came home and I had to relax and I drank. And that was a rare occasion. My former husband traveled all the time, but he was there that night. And I don't know what happened, but he took me to the hospital and I woke up, you know, obviously I passed out. And I woke up because I was, you know, at the hospital and I was drunk. I was intoxicated. That was what happened. I don't know how it happened. Well, I know how it happened. I drank, right? But I drank and I also had some medication, which was prescribed to me, but not with the vodka. And I borrowed my husband's Adderall, which was prescribed for him, not for me, but he couldn't handle it. So I did. And when I say and then I also had this medication called Strattera, which was not mood altering, but they never did long-term studies of Strattera and alcohol abuse. So we don't know how that would turn out. But so all those things were in me. Passed out, and it was a grace of God and a miracle that he was home that night. And this poor man took me to the hospital. I don't know if he had a heart attack, and he found out his wife was a drunk, right? So it's I don't remember any of that, except for I remember them asking me, you know, where I lived and all that, and answering those questions. I could, you know, that part I remember very clearly, but the rest is not so much. And I remember laying in a bed and having a, you know, an intern or somebody looking at me and like, you know, what do I do? Like they can't do anything for you, you know, and what am I going to do? And this was my first like spiritual experience, because at that time I reached out to a friend, a woman I knew who had gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have no idea what time it was, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 or whatever. But I called her and she answered the phone. I told her where I was and you know what it was like, you know, that I didn't know what to do. And she started, you know, telling me all about her problem with alcohol and how she drank. And I never thought anybody drank the way I did, you know, all the time, around the clock, doing these things. But she did. And then she gave me an action to take to enter Alcoholics Anonymous, to go to a rehabilitation facility, which of course, you know, I had to decline because I was a very busy person. As I told you, I was working during the day, teaching at night, you know, I couldn't do this, but don't worry, I did it. You know, I found the time. Before I did it, I went for a talk to my psychiatrist where I had to tell her I borrowed the pills she gave my husband, took the pills she gave me and took, you know, and drank with, she didn't know about the vodka. You know, most psychiatrists don't know, which don't tell them. And I was just depressed, but anybody would be depressed if you drank that much depressant. Anyway, so what happened to me is that spiritual experience, reaching out. And when why I'm telling you this is because I went to this rehab facility, very strict facility, and we didn't get to talk to anybody at home for like 2 weeks or have any outside conversations. And during that time, the only thing I was an alcoholic. My name is Lydia. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not Phyllis's daughter. I'm not Bill's daughter. I'm not my son's mother. I'm an alcoholic. And that produced another spiritual experience. And when I finally got my 2-week phone call in the hall, collect, to ask my husband what he did with some of the problem behavior I had, he answered what he did with my problem behavior. He said that's why he traveled for 20 years and wasn't home Monday through Friday. So that was like, you must not be alcoholics. The first time I told it, they were like, oh, that's funny. He traveled for 20 years. But anyway, it's not funny when you're me, but that was my second spiritual experience. That's when I realized I really don't know how to live. I don't know how to live. It's not just with alcohol, it's without alcohol. And that's the only way you can launch into a course of vigorous action. You know, you can't be launching on this if you have a solution for everything. So that's the start of it. So we launch on a course of vigorous action, but this is step 4. So step 1 and 2 and 3. Yeah, step 1 on those occasions, what I told you. And then 2, even though I taught Sunday school for 20 years, they just straightened me out. I mean, I came here with a God of my understanding, and that was the problem. I understood God. You know, this mind can only think so much. So I had to and wanted to I needed a different perspective because I knew Jane had this program of recovery and it was attraction, but like, you know, she had God, but I had God. How is it going to be different? How is it going to be different? So if you're new, go to meetings. I went to meetings every day. When I got out of rehab, I was convinced that I was one of you, but I was also convinced that you had a solution I wanted. And when I go to a meeting, I went to early sobriety. David would love it. 6:15 in the morning, 365 days a year. And you get up and you go there and these people are excited. They're not excited about anything, but they're alive. They woke up sober and they have a chance at the day. So I'm in this group and then, you know, I get a sponsor and the sponsor, we're working the steps. But first I have to get my brain back because remember I put all those chemicals in it, a little dicey for a little bit, you know, till I could, you know, like I went to work and I heard there's birds at work. I forgot we actually had birds at work. Okay. So, you know, I was a little bit, you know, out of it, but I was around Alcoholics Anonymous all the time. And I was with a sponsor and doing these things. And so then, and we started on the steps. And step 1, like I said, I think that happened on those occasions. But step 2, you know, God, my, you know, is my life unmanageable? Well, that became clear to me. And I'm an alcoholic. So I've got, but I have a spiritual disease. You know, so how did I get to spiritual, and how did we get to this point here? I remember the times when I needed the most help, and I had, like I said, a sponsor there, and we were reading the book, and I remember I just had a fluky accident happen with my son, and I realized, and I took my third step with her, and that's when I truly came to feel and understand that this experience was going to be different from anything I ever had before, that it wasn't transactional, that there was a God that loved me and brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had done that, but now I had some actions to take in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's where we get to where we are. But I don't think for me, this alcoholic, I would get to vigorous action and this moral and this fearless inventory if I hadn't had those spiritual experiences first. So I'm just setting up step 4.
Thank you. I'm Donald Smith, alcoholic.
Hey, Donald.
My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. My home group is the West Gang Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you are invited to come see us if you'd like. We meet at 8 o'clock at the St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in the some room in there that's actually on Princess Anne Road. So come visit us at 8 o'clock. What I'm going to tell you first is that everything I'm going to tell you didn't come from me. It's not something I know of. I was taught how to, there was no way in the world. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew for a fact I was a drunk. There was no doubt in my mind. I had 7 DUIs. I had lost everything I owned in my life. I had been kicked out of several states because I didn't have any money. I came back to Norfolk. Everything I owned was in a little box that I had taped up with duct tape and kicked from St. Louis all the way back to Norfolk on a Greyhound bus. It was just, you know, I knew it. And I knew it when I was 24. I was told I was alcoholic when I was 17. I had gone to a treatment center once and I said, I was a vacation, you know, I could just hang around for a while and not drink for a while, not have to work and eat some good food and get back. And I'll be raring to go after 30 days, 28 days. So my problem is that I didn't want to do a spiritual thing. I was not interested at all in doing God. I had gone down to several meetings and down in Tampa when I was down there in the treatment center, and they were talking about God. And I thought to myself, this is stealth Christianity. They're going to try to get me into the church. I am not doing that because I don't believe in God. You know, I don't believe in a spiritual life. I don't believe in God. This is a bootstrap kind of guy. You know, unfortunately, my bootstraps weren't very, not very strong. My bootstraps were like vodka and bourbon. But so in any event, I finally get here. Let me back up. When I was in a treatment center, they had me do step four. You know, we did the first four steps in the 28 days, right? So I'm thinking, oh yeah, I get to talk about myself. I am such an egotistical, self-centered, I'll try not to use explicit words when I'm talking tonight. I do sometimes lapse, and that I just assumed that I just would quit drinking and this wonderful Donald Smith guy would come popping out that I knew I always was. And I just got to get the alcohol out of me and I'll be okay. You know, well, this thing that was always there started popping out, but that's a little down the road. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to tell everybody how great I am. You know, I'm gonna write my inventory, and I wrote it up there on the little board and everything, and everybody kind of went, "Thank you, Donald. Keep coming back." And I left, and I thought, you know, fourth step, no problem, I can do that. I'm not doing God. So I had been in there 28 days. I was out, didn't drink for 60 days, and I moved from Tampa to Kansas City, and then went to St. Louis. And I started drinking on the 4th of July weekend. I went to see Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And that was what my drinking was like for the next 9 years. Blood, Sweat, and Tears. I drank every night, every morning, every day for 9 years. I got a DUI at 9 o'clock in the morning. I blew like 0.23 or 0.24 or something. So I knew I was a drunk. So I come in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a sponsor, like they told me. I got a home group. I wasn't mad at anybody, though. I was okay. I'm not mad at anybody. And then they put me on the coffee pot, and all the old timers would walk out the door and talk to people and smoke cigarettes, and I'd be in there doing the coffee. I was mad about that. They just having me this young. I was mad. You know, and then somebody comes in and says, there's a lot of sobriety in coffee grounds, isn't there? Get the hell out of here. I was a little more explicit than that. But in my mind, I'm like, I got all this anger and it's just popping out in all these weird places. So I do this inventory, and the guy that helped me the first time, great guy, but he was more of a drug addict than he was an alcoholic. And he gave me a Hazleton guide, and I wrote and wrote and wrote. And by the time I got to my adulthood, I couldn't drive anymore. And it didn't do anything, although it did do something, because I'm convinced really that God doesn't care what I do. God cares that I do. And if I'm an alcoholic, I'm going to end up in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, or I'm not going to get sober. This was just something for me to do to keep me sober until I got to the answer. And that's what happened to me. So I did this, and I did it, and I was like, okay. And so then I got involved in service. I started doing all this stuff. So around 5 years sober, I start going crazy again. I mean, I literally started I had these emotional ups and downs. I mean, I had a house, I had a girlfriend, I had a couple girlfriends, I had a car, I had a good job, and I'm nuts. And I don't know why that is. I have no idea. So then I run into some people who are doing the steps out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And before that, I thought, these are all, you know, Bible thumpers. There's that stealth Christian group. And then I started reading it with them. And the next thing I knew, I was like, I was hooked, because it told me things about who I was and what was going on with me that I did not know. And I was 5 years sober at the time. You know, I knew about craving. I knew about that. What I didn't know was that my life's unmanageable. What does that mean? I'm unmanageable both mentally and spiritually. And I can't take care of the mental until I take care of the spiritual. The spiritual is the whole point of doing this. And so when it says here, so we had to get down to causes, that's the mental, and the conditions is the spiritual. Causes and conditions. You know, we start off with the serenity prayer, right? You know, help me know the difference between the two, things I can't change. I do this and I come to realize I can't change anything in my life. Inside, I'm crazy. I don't have the ability to do any of this. Because I can make a change, but I'll screw it up eventually. Something will happen and I'll make the wrong choice. And then I can't handle the fact that I made the wrong choice, right? Most people can handle that. I made a wrong choice. I'll just correct it. You know, I become not suicidal, but I shrink down in these little tiny little brain cells of mine and thinking I'm a horrible person and nothing about nothing. I mean, it's a horrible thing. I mean, the top of the heap, the bottom of the heap. So my sponsor, this is a short version of this. Step one is the problem. Step two, the solution. Step three is I'm going to go after the solution. And step four is the action of step three, which is I launch out on this inventory. Because I got to find out who is the person that I just gave. I don't know who I am, right? So I turn my will and life over to the care of God. Well, who is that? Well, I don't have a clue. I think I do. I don't have a clue who that person is. None. And so I read this and it says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. That's a promise. That's not something that I'm like, well, I want to do that because I don't want to be crazy anymore. I want to have all of it. I'm not a drunk that will have the drinks beer. Because to me, that's just part of it. I want alcohol. I'm a liquor drinker. So I want it all. So in my attitude about sobriety is that I want it all too. So I guess I'll have to hurry up a little bit more. So I had to put these things on paper. And one of the things I learned later, much later, about 15 years sober, it says we listed people, institutions, and principles, you know, and with whom we were angry. Now, we don't have to be angry with a principal, although you can be. But this guy from Denver told me about this. He says, you list principles. He goes, what's a principle? Something you say to yourself over and over. Get in the car, turn off the radio, and listen to what you're saying to yourself. And if you say the same thing more than once, like I'm a jerk, that's a principle. I'm living my life by that talk in my head. So where did that come from? I write that down on column one. I say, what's the cause of it? Column two. I say, what areas of my life are being affected by column three? And then we go to column. So these are the first four columns, first three columns. It's my grudge list. And I will tell you right now, I didn't think I was mad at many people. Come to find out, I was mad at everybody. Everybody I knew, I was mad at. For some, they had done some slight to me. And I kept it. I dusted it off in the middle of the night. Think about it. So, yeah, no, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, I can't believe these people. But he says that we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused all failure. It doesn't say God caused them. It doesn't say you caused them. I caused them. And when I can take that, that is something important for me to know, right? Because then I have something I can do about it. I can't do anything about you. I try really hard and I can't do nothing about it, but I can do something about myself. And I'll just say this one quick thing. I heard this said once, no alcoholic alive, unless they're sober for any length of time, knows how to do an accurate inventory. We just don't know how to do it. You ever heard people, they're gonna do their amends list, they put themselves on the top? You know what I'm saying? Wait a minute. Why would you do that? It has nothing to do with you, with me. It has everything to do with you and me turning myself outward towards people. But I can't turn outward until I turn inward and see who this person is and what I can let God take care of for me. And I start off by the obvious, and I'll stop right here. The obvious is who made me mad? What did they do to me? What areas of my life were affected by? And that gives me a chance to be yelling at them. Writing down. I never ever felt bad about writing inventory. I have never felt bad because the outcome of that inventory is so much better than sitting in that. I just can't tell you. I mean, I've written a lot. I wrote inventory about David Francis. He pissed me off one day. I mean, man, did he make me mad. Fortunately, I didn't do anything about that. So I didn't have to make amends to him. So that was a really good thing. I just got my feelings hurt and walked away.
Is that where we're going to end it?
Yeah. Yes. You bet we are, man. wait a minute. There's more to come, pal.
I've heard a few footsteps with your name on it too.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Wow. I'm glad about that. Thank you.
I know.
Okay. Protect myself.
I got someone closer to their sponsor.
As long as we're not ignored, you know.
That's it.
So we're going to continue on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to...
Amen. Thank you. And I was telling you about going to meetings and getting get a home group. I do service work. The greatest privilege is sponsoring other people. But I got to tell you, that home group I went to at 6:15 a.m. in the morning at the Chabad every day, you know what their thing was every day? What step are you on? What step are you on? I was like, oh, step. You know, so yeah, you got into these steps. And if you're new, a lot of times that four step, it seems like, oh boy, I don't know. But they also said, and I've said this many a time, that if you do not complete your fourth step, you will finish a fifth of vodka, gin, you know, whatever. So, you know, these people knew what they were talking about, right? And I love this. Now, when I get to, went back through our lives. Okay, before we do this, I got a sponsor. She's laying out just what he's talking about, the calmness, blah, blah, blah. She does what she does is she explains it to me just like it's in the book, right? And that's what we're going to do this. So the first thing you have to do is, this is before Amazon and all, you got to go to the store and buy a beautiful, notebook to write your inventory in. And at that time I went to the art museum, got a leather notebook, and it's red and beautiful and lots of pages open. So, I wanted to have something really nice, write all the ugly in, but I didn't know that, So I had to do that. That took a little bit of time. Since we're launching into this, well, first you got to get a notebook. My sponsor lays out, this is exactly what you do, right? Okay. And it's written right there, just like that. So I made an appointment with one of my sisters in sobriety. I call him a sister if we share the same sponsor. And I sat down with her. So what's this about this, this inventory? And she tells me the same thing the sponsor told me that was written in the book. Okay. So, and then I think I made one more appointment. So, I'm not heading right into this. Okay. I know there's a solution here, but we don't want to whatever. And then here's the other thing. I came here with half a century to write about. Wow. That's a scary amount of time, going back, and how am I going to, how am I going to gather all this together, take it and write it down. So when I went back through my life, I'm telling you, the first resentment was, church or a person, because I had this wonderful neighborhood and the pastor was my neighbor, and he had my best friend, Mary, and her twin brother, Mark. And they were my friends and they adopted all these kids. And my neighborhood was wonderful. And then he got a call. Lutherans say they got a call. He had to go to another church. I'm like, hang up, don't take the call. But he left. And then I was left with one person in the neighborhood, Tommy Kovacs. My first resentment against the church, against him. I don't know. But anyway, that's how we started out with things like that. People and what happened was, I had a name, victim. We're always victims. But before I was a victim, from a very young age, my friend Mary, who was a good Catholic, called me a martyr. Martyr Liz. I don't need alcohol, you know, to be sick. I came in here with a lot of sick ideas. That's why this is like critical, because alcohol, you know, I did actually know coming in that it was my solution, you know, and I knew I was the problem. I kind of knew that. And I, you know, and you people would say what you did when you were drunk. And I'm like, you know, I, you know, thought like this stone sober. I always thought, you know, when we talk about family trips, we drive by a house, like if I lived there and if I would ever in this town, I'd be, you know, they just don't appreciate me here. You know, I don't know what I was supposed to be appreciated for, but I'm sure, you know, it was something very special that hadn't been found yet. You know, I had potential, which is, you know, French word for you haven't done anything yet, right? So, but I just had this, you know, this self-importance. And, you know, even from the time I was a small kid, I was going to cross the mountain going to New York. You know, I was a runaway from home. Well, I didn't run away. My mom packed my lunch. So it's not running away when she, you know, she literally packed my lunch so I could leave. But I was only five. I came back because there's no bathrooms on the road at that time. So I came back. But this is a problem since the day I was born, of looking at how things should be for me. So writing down a list and looking at these people and concluding that others were, that's about as far as I've gotten. I was so good at taking everybody else's inventory. I did have a plan. And the plan was if you cross certain, you know, barriers or something didn't turn out, then you were just off the list. We're done. You know, that's how I live my life. And I had a good whatever drink and moved on. And, you know, it says it right here. Oh, my God. Any moments of triumph, short lived. It's painful. You need a drink. You need a drink to do that. And it's not, my drinking wasn't, you know, on and continuous. As a matter of fact, the best thing that ever happened to me, my younger son went off to school and I was there at home alone. And that's when I started to drink every day. And he's like, what? You're crazy. Like, that's the greatest gift. Because there could be no question about being an alcoholic and having a solution in the bottle because I drank every day for it. So in order to get down to this list that went on and on, and it's real funny because the longer you're here, you realize the shorter the list is. You know, I wanted everything in there because I heard, you know, if you didn't have it all in, it wouldn't be good. But then what happened is my friend Vicky, we got sober on the same day, and she did her, they announced whatever in the morning. Oh, where are you, Vicky? I'm like, oh, we're doing my fifth step. I'm like, oh, that's it. I don't want her to be ahead of me, right? She's going to be more sober than me. So boom, I launched into the most vigorous action that night. Got it done, made an appointment, see my sponsor. And, you know, and that was it. But, you know, sick, you know, definitely this is what's needed for me, because just to put down the drink, I mean, that was a miracle that God took away the drink. And at this point, thinking about drinking isn't what's happening. I don't know the day, the minute, the hour he took that obsession away. But then I'm just faced with the obsession of self. So that's why this has to go, because this, I'm just left with me. And, you know, you have emotions, you know, you learn how to laugh again and you learn how to cry again. So when I sat down and did these things, it was pretty clear that, you know, there weren't all these pages of people in that pretty notebook that had done me wrong, you know, but anyway, that's what we're stopping right there, to all the resentments and the futility. And, you know, when you see it like that, it's painful. But then again, I would go to a meeting every day and I'd see people who had that pain and moved on. So I recommend highly, don't stay alone. You're the problem. Go be around the solution. I mean, that's one thing. I'm not too bright, but I got that. I don't have a solution. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution. My sponsor has a solution. You know, stay home and think about it. Or people are like, I want to stay home and pray. You know, God's so smart. He heard it the first time. You don't have to do it again and again. He's God, for Pete's sake, you know? And just, you know, go do his will. You know, he heard you. I mean, he does. I mean, and you can't escape his grace. All right.
It says nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. I think Lydia mentioned it. You know, people want to do this and they want to get at everything. They say, suppose I missed something. Suppose something's not right. You always get a second chance. You know, my sponsor told me, he said, the most important thing about learning how to do a fourth step is learning how to do the fourth step. It's something that you're going to be able and going to have to use for the rest of your life. because I am not capable in many ways of being able to remember things that I learned even 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or I haven't turned over enough rocks to find out what exactly, why exactly I'm doing what I'm doing. And that's the greatest thing about doing this stuff. The code is, everybody thinks, is that, you know, it's not perfection, it's progress. And so they stop because they don't want to go towards perfection. I don't have to do anything. It just says that. I don't want to be too saintly. Well, I got news for you. You're not going to become a saint. You know, it just ain't going to happen. There's too much of the world with you unless you are really going in that direction. And there's some people that go there, but most don't. Nobody's going to become a saint. What you're going to be doing is learning how, in my case, I learned how to live my life in a way that was challenging and productive and giving of being of service to others. But I had to learn how to do that. I had to ask God to give me the strength and the insight to do that. And I do that every time I do inventory, because I do inventory still. Yeah, I have to. But it says the first thing that was apparent is that the world was often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. And that is so true. I mean, I can't tell you how true, you know, that's it. You're a jerk. That's it. Or if I knew they were right, they were wrong for some other reason. You know, they had a good car, they had a good job, they came from a nice family. None of that. I ain't got none of that stuff. Those people, life comes easy for them and they keep on going. Right. That kind of mentality I had. I mean, and any number of stuff like that you carry with you. And if you don't look at it, you continue to think about it. Yeah, I had 25 years of thinking in one way, drunk all the time. So when I quit drinking, what makes me think that I'm going to stop thinking that 25 years worth of stuff? It's the same thing. It's muscle memory. I just keep on and I keep on. I got to start someplace, stopping that process. Let's see. It is absolutely true. It did become clear to me when I was doing this that a life full of deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. You know, we call that a dry drunk for most people. Get you away from that and keep me from doing that. I don't want to do that. And it says the maintenance, and my only hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, not just having it and going one and done, or some God will strike me with some answer some way down the line. Or if I go out and help people, that's all I get to do. I get to go out and help people. I can't help anybody really unless I know what I'm talking about and unless I'm sober. I got to be able to be sober. So the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience is not just helping other people. It's this whole thing is to expand the way I relate to a power greater than myself and to allow, quote, unquote, or quote, the sunshine of the spirit to enter my life and keep me from infinitely grave resentments. Infinitely grave. It's funny. They put the word infinitely and grave together. And to drink is to die. If I drink again, I'm going to say this. For me, certain things could happen and I stop doing what I'm doing and I'm dead right there. I don't have to drink again. I will, because that's what I do. But if I start backtracking, if I start going backwards, I'm going to drink and I'm dying right at that spot. And the sooner I recognize that, the sooner I take the steps that I need to take to arrest the outcome of alcoholism. Because as everybody knows, you suffer from untreated alcoholism long before you take the first. The insanity of the first drink is everything you did up to having the first drink. Not when you're drinking and not the crazy stuff you do while you're drinking. It's that part. It could take 6 months, 6 years. It could take a long time. But I don't know about you all, but if I don't do these things, I start going crazy again. And it's the most amazing thing. I can feel a gyroscope going, you know. So I know I've got, I can know, I write down what's going on. I write the person. I write down the cause. I write down what I'm feeling. All that stuff about what I'm feeling is all the lies I've told myself. That for third column gives you more information you could ever dream of about what I have a script that everybody I know has to fit into, right? Because I'm the actor and I'm the director and I'm the writer and I'm all these things, and you got a script. And if David Francis doesn't act the way I want him to, he's outside of the script. And Lydia, come on, get with the program, right? So that's what I'm doing in my mind. When I'm in untreated alcoholism, when I'm in treated alcoholism, I'm not doing any of that stuff. I'm not doing any of it. I don't have to, because everybody gets to be who the hell they are. And that is the greatest thing about it. My only person I got to worry about is myself. So we're not getting, so I'm going to talk some more about the fourth column, which is really the best part of it. So,
okay.
I'll resign.
So to that end, we've just got two readings left. I'm just going to read them both and let you guys carry us out of here. We're going to pick up on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And on page 67, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. We saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black, and we admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
Thank you. I like the key, because I'm thinking like returning the key in the door. We're unlocking the door here, and it's the key to the future. And just like looking at it differently, you know, not the martyr, the victim, and to see the world and its people, you know, and how it dominated us, but it really didn't dominate us. My thoughts on it dominated us. What I thought you were thinking of me dominated me and not us. And in that state, you know, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, I mean, it could actually kill, or because it would drive me to a drink, and then I would drink, and I drank quite a bit, you know, obviously ended up in the hospital, so, you know, it could kill. And, but how could I escape that, right, with these resentments and master them? How am I going to master them? And it was one of those things, can't wish it away. So when we get to this point where we realize that there's people who we think wronged us, you know, but the only thing in every page of my resentment, there's one common denominator, and you know what that is, right? It's me, right? And everything, you know, it didn't happen to you, and I wrote it down. It's me and everything and every problem and how I'm looking at things. And you know what? At this point too, I'm like, it's not pleasant. You get to see how this wasn't pleasant. Not only did it pain me, but it pained the people around me, you know? And so I asked, you know, and I like this part here, you know, I didn't like what was adding up on the paper. And it was, you know, I told you like, oh gosh, all this page after page, but it was the same thing again and again. But anyway, one quick thing, if you're new at this, you don't need to write a lot. It's just like the person, an incident, go on. You don't have to be writing lots and lots. Just write a little bit, get it done. You know, what happened, move, adding that in. For my sponsor and everybody who sponsors sake, you know. Anyway, so we get back to this, and then what happened with this part here? You know, We would cheerfully grant, you know, help. We would cheerfully grant a sick friend when a person offended. Oh my gosh, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful? And I was newly sober. You can ask my former husband. Oh, anybody was a jerk. Oh, must be an alcoholic. You know, they must be very sick. Everybody else was sick. You know, we had to be nice to them because I thought that was the solution, and that is not it. What I have to do is be nice on the inside. And that's what it. You know, we don't retaliate. One thing about an early morning meeting is people would talk a lot about the traffic being cut off, you know, being cut off before they're driving to the meeting. And I told my sponsor, oh, yeah, somebody cut in front of me, cut in front of you. And what? On the road. What? Yeah, in front of you. Yeah. Is it your road? No. So they didn't cut in front of you. It's not your road, you know? And it's like, oh, so somebody got in front of me on the road. Okay. So these are, you might seem not, nothing to you, but it's a different way of looking. You know, I can't be blaming. And it, you know, it didn't mean anything. And that's the, oh my gosh, that's the best part about this. We get several realize the world is not out to get us. That's, you know, we were out to get us or get the world on our side. And it's not that. It's not that. We have this greatest blessing in this higher power that we met through these programs. And not everybody's sick. We were the sick one. We're the one who needs to take the inventory and get this new view. Right. We return to our list again. And this is when the miracle happens, when we can see very specifically, you know, like some of this was not a surprise. You know, when I was a small child, I used to be called Liar Lidge. So obviously that was, you know, one of the things, you know, character defects, you know, right there on the paper. So we're starting to look at what was where I had been selfish, dishonest, and selfish. Where had I, these character defects that I had that we don't have, not all of us have. You know, where had they turned on others and on myself? And then this, and then I get to see these faults, and they didn't serve you or anybody else well. And, you know, place them on the paper. And because I had this gift from God to come into this program in sobriety, at that time with my first, I really could see, and I was willing, and I wanted to change. I put it down on a piece of paper, and it wasn't pretty, and it was just the barest beginning, but it was an ability to see what I had been doing, what I had been setting up as the director running the show, and how I looked at life, and that I didn't have to continue that way, and that that we can take the worst of what we have and turn it into a gift for somebody else. I have to keep reading this, and that's also. Based, I'm going to talk about this daily. It's not once and done. We take inventory every night. You don't have to wait till nighttime. You can stop. Right, oh, wait a minute. Oh, I owe her, you know, like, you know, turn, ask God for help, and then, you know, take care of it right away. I remember not wanting to create new resentments because, you know, there's a lot of writing. So I just tried to pretend I liked everybody for a while too. But, you know, I think you guys are great, especially you, David. You're my fan. You, my favorite is favorite. But anyway, you know, so, but this is what we're exposed to when we expose ourselves to this inventory. And this is, we're going to stop here, but oh my gosh, who could be wrong? Yeah. And what a blessing to know we don't have to keep it. You know, I'll stop there.
Thanks, Ledger.
I'll make this as quick as I can. Just this line up here at the top, that the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, had the power to kill. That is so much. That is such a wonderfully written. It is just absolutely the truth. But let me get real quick into the other part. When we started off, we talked about causes and conditions. What I was taught and what I've come to believe my own self is that selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened are my conditions. That is who I am. That can't change. That won't change. I am naturally dishonest. The book says we are constitutionally incapable of being honest with ourselves, not with you. I can tell you the truth. I am myself all the time. All right, I'm constitutionally incapable. It says that I'm selfish, right? So the root of my problem is selfishness. And it always has been that way. And now what is self-seeking? Self-seeking is the action taken based on selfish and dishonest conditions. It's action. And then the last one is frightened. So what's the inventory next week is going to be really interesting. I'll just give you this little thing. Everything in this list, my grudge list, is about me being afraid. All of it. Behind all this anger and all this stuff is fear. I'm afraid of everything, right? Now, I was about 10, 15 years sober, and my sister came to visit from Ohio. And she comes waltzing into Norfolk. She's good looking. She married an engineer. She's got money. She drives a Lexus. She's everything, right? And when she walks in the door, everybody's heads turned. They talk to her. And I go into the house and I'm like, I'm sober for a while. And I'm like, bitch, I'm in the room for like, you know, and I'm like, I was mad. And I had to leave. But I knew when I walked out the door, because I live across the street from my parents, I walked across the street back to my house and I went, I can't do this. She can't be in this place any length of time and have me not write it. So I sat down and I wrote some inventories and agreed to my sponsor. You know, the first thing it says is, where am I dishonest? And you know what I wrote? I don't even like her. Why do I care what she says? And what's the point of this? And that's when I got the truth of the matter. It's not about her. It was about my parents and the people who see her. It's not nothing to do about her. It's me being eclipsed by other people. I want what I want. And when she walks in the room, I don't feel like I'm getting it. It's not her fault. She's just being the jerk she's always been, right? I love her, but she's still a jerk. So I learned by doing this, that this process allows me the ability to accept people who they are, because I have to look at myself and accept that person that I am, right? And it says, there's four columns, right? The first three on that chart, and then the fourth column is what we just read, this part. Then this says we list. So that's the fifth column. You list all these defects of character and rationalization, justification, manipulate, all this stuff comes out of those four conditions that I do. And that's how I was taught. Those are my defects of character that I'm trying to ask God to remove. Not trying to, I'm going to ask God to remove after I finish discussing them with myself. All right. And every single one of that, all of it's based on fear, all of them. And I'll just say this about fear. I kept thinking all the time that fear was something that was generated because I was afraid of something, right? The book says, I drink. Why do I drink? I drink because I'm an alcoholic. What's one of my conditions as an alcoholic? I'm afraid. My natural condition is being afraid. It has nothing to do with what you did or what I'm not going to get or what I'm going to lose. It is my natural condition. I don't know that. But I had to write inventory to get to the spot to realize I am naturally afraid. I wake up in the morning sometimes afraid. I haven't had a drink, nothing. Nobody said nothing to me, but I got, why? Because I'm an alcoholic, part of my illness. And I didn't know any of that. And I'm just saying, write some inventory, learn it. Learn what's going on with you, because it'll be the best thing you'll ever do. And the best part about it, my other thing is this. You know, the book says self-knowledge is of no help for an alcoholic. So all this stuff we just talked about that I did tonight, self-knowledge, none of that can help me. I got to give that to God. But you know why I'm doing this? So I can talk to you about it and you can realize what it is you need to do so that you can go talk to them. That's the point. I can't do nothing else but give you what I've got and what I've experienced. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's been an amazing experience. I had stories about it, but I won't tell them because we ran out of time. So thank you, Amy. Thank you for asking me tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you both. Amazing. We're going to pass the seven tradition basket. In the basket is a little PayPal Venmo. If you like it, let's see. You can sign up for email at our website at simpleactions.net. Let's see. The PayPal link is at Simple Actions. One word. Venmo is simple-actions. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remains self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA?